and your college degree was almost certainly worth it, even if you're only considering the financial return on investment and not including the benefits of making lifelong friends, building priceless habits of discipline, and exposing yourself to new ideas as an educated citizen. Ignore the scare tactics of the student loan crisis. If you have student loan debt, use the material in this book to create a repayment plan. Most people are playing the game wrong. I've spoken to literally thousands of people who are in debt. Some of them have had tough situations, like unexpected illnesses, elderly parents who need support, surprise expenses. But candidly, some of them are simply playing the game wrong. They've never spent a weekend reading a book on personal finance. They don't even know how much they owe. Instead of doing the work to aggressively win at the game of debt, they complain. It's like watching a four-year-old trying to play Monopoly, then realizing they can't understand the rules, which they've never read, by the way, getting angry, and then flipping the board over. Instead, I'll show you how to win. When it comes to student loans and credit cards, my goal for you is to stop playing defense. I'm going to show you how to play offense instead. For student loans, make an aggressive plan and minimize the amount of interest you pay. For credit cards, I squeeze every single benefit out of them. Basically, I want the credit card companies to hate you as they hate me. The best part is how fast you can change your financial life once you switch from playing defense to playing offense with your money. Ryan Healy, who's 27 years old, wrote, "In the 3.5 years since I read the book, I paid off $14,000 in credit card debt and $8,000 in student loan debt." Jeff Collins, 35, wrote, "In the past year since I started this book, I opened a 401k and a Roth IRA. I understand how they work, and I've funded $7,200 towards my retirement. I also opened 2 credit cards to build my utilization and boost my credit score, and am 100% a deadbeat customer who pays on time every month in full." And Emily Bauman, who's 24 years old, wrote, "I learned how to automate my credit card payments, set up flexible spending, and start investing in index funds. Today, I've amassed over $40,000 in my net worth, having been out of school for less than 2 years. Thanks for the advice." Bank of America hates me. Bank of America, one of the world's shittiest banks, hates me because I've named them as one of the worst banks out there. Good news! 10 years later, they're still on my list for screwing over my readers repeatedly. Wells Fargo is also on my list. I don't cut deals with banks. I don't need their money. And I call out the best and worst financial companies for my readers. As you can imagine, the worst companies don't like being named in a New York Times best-selling book. I discovered Bank of America hates me because one of my friends works in their corporate office. One day she reached out to me and said, "Did you know you're on a Bank of America influencer list?" I was surprised. Me? Little old me? Then she added, "It's a negative influencer list." I have never been so proud. Playing offense. Use credit to accelerate your rich life. People love to pick sexy investments and use fancy terms like distressed securities and EBITDA when they focus on getting rich. But they often ignore something that is so simple, so basic, that it doesn't seem important. Their credit. Ironically, credit is one of the most vital factors in getting rich, but because it's hard to wrap our minds around it, we often overlook it entirely. It's time to wake up and pay attention to it, because establishing good credit is the first step in building an infrastructure for getting rich. Think about it. Our largest purchases are almost always made on credit, and people with good credit save tens of thousands of dollars on these purchases. Credit has a far greater impact on your finances than saving a few dollars a day on a cup of coffee. There are 2 main components to your credit, also known as your credit history. Those are your credit report and your credit score. These boring terms can actually save you tens of thousands of dollars over your lifetime. So listen up. This is an example of a big win. It's worth paying attention to. Your credit report gives potential lenders basic information about you, your accounts, and your payment history. It tracks all credit-related activities, for example, credit cards and loans, although recent activities are given higher weight. Your credit score, often called your FICO score because it was created by the Fair Isaac Corporation, is a single, easy-to-read number between 300 and 850 that represents your credit risk to lenders. It's like an SAT score for the credit industry, and higher is better. The lenders take this number, and with a few other pieces of information, such as your salary and age, decide if they'll lend you money for credit, like a credit card, a mortgage, or a car loan. They'll charge you more or less for the loan, depending on your score, which signifies how risky you are. It is ridiculously easy to check your credit score and credit report, and you should do it right now. Once a year, by law, you're allowed to obtain your credit report for free at annualcreditreport.com. It includes basic information about all your accounts and payment history. Lots of people use Credit Karma to get a free credit score, but I prefer the official score from MyFICO, which is more accurate even though it has a small fee. Why are your credit report and credit score important? Because a good credit score can save you hundreds of thousands of dollars in interest charges. How? Well, if you have good credit, it makes you less risky to lenders, meaning they can offer you a better interest rate on loans. Maybe you don't need a loan today, but in 3 or 4 years, you might need to start thinking about a car or a house. So please don't scoff or dismiss at what you just heard. One of the key differences between rich people and everyone else is that rich people plan before they need to plan. If you doubt that a loan's interest rate really makes that much of a difference, let me give you an example. Listen to the differences in what you'd pay for a 30-year mortgage based on your credit score. So let's assume you're buying a house for $200,000. I know, it's more expensive where you live, but just play along for the math. If you have poor credit, like your score is between 620 to 639, your interest rate might be 5.8%. So your total purchase price would be over $425,000 for that house. That's a bad example. That's if you have low credit. Now let's go to the best credit. For this $200,000 house and a 30-year mortgage, if your FICO score was really good, between 760 to 850, you might get offered an interest rate of 4.2%. Guess what? You'd pay in total for that house $355,000. Compare the difference. With poor credit, your total purchase price would be over $425,000. But with great credit, you would only pay $355,000. As you heard, a high credit score can save you tens of thousands of dollars over your lifetime, or more if you live in a high cost of living area. So while other people spend hours cutting coupons and agonizing over generic brands at the grocery store or beating themselves up over a morning latte, they're failing to see the bigger picture. It's fine to keep a close eye on your expenses, but you should focus on spending time on the things that matter, the big wins. So let's dig into some tactics to improve your credit, which is quantifiably worth much more than any advice about frugality. JC, who's 29 years old, wrote, "My credit mistake was I opened my account too late, and I very quickly started using my card to stay out of my bank overdraft. It got out of hand. Then I forgot I had to make a payment, and I missed a payment. I wish I'd understood how a credit card would help my credit score a decade ago, because then I would have already made, learned from, and recovered from my daft mistakes with it." Building credit with credit cards. Credit comes in many forms, like car loans, mortgages, and so on. But we're going to start with credit cards because almost all of us have one, and most important, they're the fastest and most concrete way to optimize your credit. Most people are making at least one or two major mistakes with their credit card. And the good news is that it's incredibly easy to fix this by learning a bit about how credit cards work. Getting a new card. How do I choose the right credit card? Well, I have a few simple rules that I use when choosing my own cards. First, don't accept credit card offers that come in the mail or from retail stores like Gap or Nordstrom. Next, squeeze every reward you can out of your credit cards. Finally, pick a good one, then move on with your life. Now, here's how to do it. Get rewarded for your spending. There are different levels of reward cards. Some are very basic, while others offer hundreds of dollars in annual benefits, or even thousands, depending on how much you spend. First, decide what you want to get rewarded with, cash back or travel. Personally, I recommend cash back because it's straightforward, there are excellent cash back cards, and it's simpler than travel rewards, which require more sophistication to truly maximize. For more on maximizing travel rewards, you can look up forums on something called credit card churning. Once you decide on the primary reward you want, use a site like Bankrate.com to sort through your options. Most of the best reward cards have fees. Are they worth it? Well, you should run the numbers to decide, which takes less than 5 minutes. Here's a quick rule of thumb. If you spend thousands per month on your credit card, the rewards are usually worth it. But if you spend more modestly, or you're not sure you want to pay a fee, spend a few minutes doing a quick analysis by searching for credit card rewards calculator. Plug in your numbers, and you'll quickly see which reward cards are worth it for you. Bottom line is that it's almost always worth getting a rewards card. Be sure to do your homework and pick one where you value the rewards. Don't sign up for retail store credit cards. These cards might as well have "you screwed yourself" written on them in 36-point type. I cannot count the number of times I've been in line and seen someone buying $40 of socks or a cheap t-shirt or two, and I just wait for the conversation that I know is about to happen. "Would you like to open a credit card?" the salesperson asks, praying he meets his commission goal for the month. "You'll save 10%. Yep, there it is. Between clenched teeth, you'll see me standing there muttering, "Shut your mouth, Remy. Don't say anything. They don't want your unsolicited..." And then you hear the person at the register go, "Yeah, I'll open that card. Why not? Couldn't hurt." 2 points for our friend who decided to open a retail card. Number one, as a general rule, whenever you say "it couldn't hurt," it very much could hurt. In fact, every time I've said that in my life, I've proceeded to make a huge mistake. Number two, this person just opened one of the most predatory cards out there to save $4. Jesus, you might as well reach into a dirty gutter to find some pennies. That would be cheaper than the financial beating you're going to eventually take. Get some standards, people. You wouldn't marry the first person who touched your elbow, so why would you sign up for a retail store card that has high fees, near extortionate interest rates, and terrible rewards? As for the credit card offers that come in the mail, generally you can find better options by researching online. Side note, if you find yourself getting a ton of credit card offers and other junk mail, go to optoutprescreen.com to get off their marketing lists. Paul Frazier, who's 30 years old, wrote, "I forgot to pay a stupid $25 Gap bill. It was a huge pain in the ass over $25. They dinged my credit and almost sent it to collections. I followed the process to challenge it 6 months later. Told them it was a one-time mistake. I believe the phone agent gave me an address to send a letter. I did, and a couple months later, the remark was gone from my account." Searching for credit cards online. A secret of the credit card industry: when you compare credit cards online, you're entering a murky world of SEO and affiliate fees where nearly all credit card listings are compensated. This means that virtually every site is being paid for showing you their recommended cards, and it's not actually easy to see why certain cards are being recommended. You can usually find very good cards on these sites, but if you're a high spender, be sure to take a few extra minutes searching around. For example, when I was beginning to plan my wedding, I looked for the best cashback card. Buried at the bottom of some random forum post, I found a cashback credit card from Alliant Credit Union that paid 3% for the first year of spending, then 2% afterward. That was the best cashback reward on the market, but the card never showed up in my original searches. The exact credit cards I use. Years ago, I decided to optimize my credit card rewards. I knew I was about 95% of the way there. I had cash back and travel cards for my business and personal spending, but I wanted to get truly dialed in for that last 5%. What can I say? I love this stuff. As my business had grown to dozens of employees, my spending had increased considerably. These rewards started to become meaningful, and I wanted to be sure I was squeezing every benefit that I could. For example, at a certain point, we were spending over $40,000 a month on ads. I know most people don't need to maximize points at this level, but I think it's fascinating, and I want to share what I learned. I wanted to know, am I squeezing out every possible reward from my spending? How should I handle large spending events, like my wedding or a team retreat? And when should I use a cashback card versus a travel card? Most importantly, what am I missing? What are all the cool things I should be asking for that I don't even know about? Finding answers was harder than I thought. I set up a bunch of calls with travel experts who'd offered to help me out. The first question I asked them was, where do you stay when you travel? When they told me that they stay at $7 hostels to save money, I knew that we were not on the same page, so I kept searching. Then I had an unusual call with a guy named Chris. I had my credit cards in pretty good shape, Chris told me, but then I wanted to get really good. And I know guys like you and me don't have a lot of time to play credit card games of opening and closing cards all the time. I was listening. Chris told me how he set up his cards to maximize rewards to the tune of millions of points. I was interested, but I wanted to see if he really knew what he was talking about. Then he said this. You want to know what I do to really squeeze points out of my credit cards? I said, yes. He said, some hotels will give you 500 points for every night that you waive housekeeping. So if I'm traveling alone, I get a room with two beds. I switch beds, switch towels, and I get my 500 points. When I heard this, I was sold. He was so detailed, so fanatical, that he had optimized down to the level of towel usage. I had met my hero. Chris Hutchins is the CEO of Grove, a financial planning service geared towards young professionals. He also happens to be extremely skilled in optimizing travel rewards. My goal was to build a playbook of how to use credit cards to maximize rewards for my personal and business lives. My assistant Jill spent weeks working with Chris, analyzing my spending and my upcoming expenses. The goal was to boil it down into that simplified playbook that Jill could use when making purchasing decisions. Now, the entire document is 15 pages long, but here's the key takeaway. If you're booking travel or eating out, use the travel card to maximize rewards. For everything else, use a cashback card. The card I use for travel and eating out is the Chase Sapphire Reserve. For everything else, I use an Alliant cashback card. And for business, I use a Capital One cashback business card. Now for extra benefits like lounge access, I have an Amex Platinum card. The result of this is thousands of dollars in cashback every year, millions of reward points, and a new life motto, MBWOSIS. My body will only sleep in suites. Don't go card crazy. Now that you're in the market, you might be tempted by any number of card offers. But don't overdo it. There's no magic number of cards you should have, but each additional card you get means added complexity for your personal finance system. That means more to keep track of and more places for things to go wrong. Two or three cards is a good rule of thumb. The average American, by the way, has four credit cards. Hassan Ahmed, who's 36 years old, wrote, "My online business profile didn't have my latest address, so I never received statements. For 34 months, my bank account got charged $60. I ignored it and didn't investigate it, hoping it would go away. I was cocky that I could force them to waive these charges because of the relationship. Then I finally willed myself to look into it, visited branches, and called five different departments. No bid. Once all was said and done, I ended up paying $2,000 for a $3,000 initial balance. It completely smoked my confidence. I closed down all 11 of my cards except my Chase Sapphire Preferred. Technically, I'm still ahead, but the thought of having paid $2,000 when I didn't have to, and it was 100% avoidable and in my control, was too much. Remember, there are other sources of credit besides credit cards. These include installment loans, such as auto loans, personal lines of credit, home equity lines of credit, and service credit, such as utilities. Your credit score is based on your overall sources of credit. Take it slow, Craig Watts of Fair Isaac Corporation says, cautioning against prescribing a specific number of credit sources. It depends how long you've been managing credit. The less information in your credit report, the higher prominence of each new report. For example, if you only have one credit card in your name, when you open another account, the weight of that action is more than it would be 10 years down the line. In short, pick two or three great cards, maximize rewards sensibly, and remember that these cards are just one part of your overall financial infrastructure. The Six Commandments of Credit Cards. Now it's time to go on offense and take full advantage of your cards. You'll improve your credit while automatically being rewarded for the purchases you're already making. Optimizing your credit is a multi-step process. One of the most important factors is getting out of debt, which we'll tackle at the end of this chapter. But first, we'll set up automatic credit card payments so you never miss a payment again. Then, we'll see how to cut fees, get better rewards, and take everything you can from the credit card companies. Number one, pay off your credit card regularly. Yeah, we've all heard it, but what you may not know is that your debt payment history represents 35% of your credit score. That's the largest chunk. In fact, the single most important thing you can do to improve your credit is to pay your bills on time. Whether you're paying the full amount of your credit card bill or risking my wrath by paying just part of it, pay it on time. Lenders like prompt payers, so don't give your credit card company the opportunity to raise your rates and lower your credit score by being a few days late with your payment. This is a great example of focusing on what will get you rich, not on what's sexy. Think about your friends who search every single website to get the best deal on travel or clothes. They might be thrilled after saving $10, and they can brag to everyone about all the deals they got. But you'll quietly save thousands by understanding the invisible importance of credit, by paying your bills on time, and by having a better credit score. Today, most people pay their credit card bills online, but if you haven't set up automatic payment yet, log on to your credit card's website to do so now. Don't worry if you don't always have enough money in your checking account to pay off the full amount on your credit card. You'll get a statement from your credit card company each month before the payment goes through, so you can adjust your payment as needed. Eric Henry, who's 25 years old, wrote, "I totally forgot the due date for my credit card. So not only did they charge me a late fee, but they charged me interest on that month's and the previous month's purchases. I called up the customer service line of the card and told them that I'd been a good customer in the past and asked if they could do anything for me with the fees. The representative removed the late fee and refunded $20 of the interest charge back to my account. They returned a total of $59 to me with one phone call." Awful consequences. If you miss even one payment on your credit card, here are four terrible, horrible, no good, very bad results you may face. Number one, your credit score can drop more than 100 points, which would add $227 a month to an average 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. Number two, your APR can go up to 30%. Number three, you'll be charged a late fee, usually around $35. And number four, your late payment can trigger rate increases on your other credit cards as well, even if you've never been late on them. I find this fact totally amazing. Now, don't get too freaked out. You can recover from the hit to your credit score, usually within a few months. In fact, if you're just a few days late with your payment, you may incur a fee, but generally it won't be reported to the credit bureaus. Number two, try to get fees on your card waived. This can be a great way to optimize your credit cards because your credit card companies will do all the work for you. Call them using the phone number on the back of the card and ask if you're paying any fees, including annual fees or service charges. It should go a little something like this. "Hi, I'd like to confirm that I'm not paying any fees on my credit card." Credit card rep: "Well, it looks like you have an annual fee of $100. That's actually one of our better rates." Then you can say, "I'd rather pay no fees. Can you waive this year's annual fee?" Earlier I mentioned that it can be worth paying annual fees for rewards cards. This is true, but why not ask? Remember, credit card companies compete ferociously with each other, which can benefit you. Call them a month before your new annual fee kicks in and ask them to waive it. Sometimes it works, sometimes not. If you decide that your credit card fee isn't worth it, ask your credit card company what they'll do for you. If they'll waive your fees, great. If not, you can switch to a no-fee card. I suggest you do this at the same credit card company to simplify your life and so you don't have to close one account and open another, which will temporarily affect your credit score. Number 3, negotiate a lower APR. Your APR, or annual percentage rate, is the interest rate your credit card company charges you. APRs fluctuate, but in general, they hover around 13 to 16%. This is very high. That makes it extremely expensive if you carry a balance on your card. Put another way, since you can make an average of about 8% in the stock market, your credit card is getting a great deal by lending you money. If you could get a 14% return, you'd be thrilled. You want to avoid the black hole of credit card interest payments so you can earn money, not give it to the credit card companies. So, call your credit card company and ask them to lower your APR. If they ask why, tell them you've been paying your bill in full, on time, for the last few months, and you know there are a number of credit cards offering better rates than you're currently getting. In my experience, this works about half the time. It's important to note that your APR technically doesn't matter if you're paying your bills in full every month. In fact, you could have a 2% APR or an 80% APR, and it would be irrelevant since you don't pay interest if you pay your total bill each month. But this is a quick and easy way to pick the low-hanging fruit with one phone call. Lila Nutt, who's 30 years old, wrote, "Reading IWT, I've probably saved $15,000 to $25,000 in interest alone. I've negotiated car loans, student loans, home loans, etc." Number 4, keep your main cards for a long time and keep them active, but also keep them simple. Lenders like to see a long history of credit, which means that the longer you hold an account, the more valuable it is for your credit score. Don't get suckered by introductory offers and low APRs. If you're happy with your card, keep it. Some credit card companies will cancel your account after a certain period of inactivity. To avoid having a card you rarely use shut down, set up automatic payment on it. For example, I set it up so that one of my cards pays a $12.95 monthly subscription through my checking account each month, which requires zero intervention on my part. But my credit report reflects that I've had the card for more than 5 years, which improves my credit score. Play it safe. If you have a credit card, keep it active using an automatic payment at least once every 3 months. Now the tricky part. If you decide to get a new card, should you close your old card? I've changed my view here over the years. The typical advice is to keep cards open for as long as possible, which is generally smart. But if you have lots of cards that you never use, reconsider this. Some of my readers have opened over 20 plus cards to churn rewards, and now they can't keep track of all their cards. This is where you have to make a decision on risk versus reward and simplicity versus complexity. There's lots of advice warning against closing credit cards, but as long as you're paying your balances on time and you have good credit, closing an old card will not have a major long-term impact on your credit score. Think balance. For most people, having 2 or 3 credit cards is perfect. If you have a special reason to have more cards, for example, if you own a business or you're intentionally maximizing temporary sign-up rewards, great. But if you find yourself swamped with the number of cards you have, close the inactive ones. As long as you have good credit, the long-term impact will be minimal and you'll sleep easier at night with a simple financial system that you can easily keep track of. Number 5, get more credit. Warning, do this only if you have no debt. This one is counterintuitive, and to explain it, I have to reach into personal finance lessons of yore. Many people don't realize this, but in the classic 80s Salt-N-Pepa song, Push It, when they say the dance isn't for everybody, only for the sexy people, they are actually detailing a sound personal finance strategy. Before I explain, I want to acknowledge that, yes, I actually just quoted Salt and Peppa in an actual published book. Anyway, when they talk about only the sexy people, what they really mean is this tip is only for the financially responsible people. And I'm serious about this warning. This tip is only for people who have no credit card debt and pay their bills in full each month. It's not for anyone else. It involves getting more credit to improve something called your credit utilization rate, which is simply how much you owe divided by your available credit. This makes up 30% of your credit score. For example, if you owe $4,000 and you have $4,000 in total available credit, your ratio is 100%. That's 4,000 divided by 4,000 times 100, which is bad. If, however, you only owe $1,000, but you have $4,000 in available credit, your credit utilization is a much better 25%. That's 1,000 divided by 4,000 times 100. Lower is preferred because lenders don't want you regularly spending all the money you have available through credit. It's too likely that you'll default and not pay them anything. To improve your credit utilization rate, you have two choices. Stop carrying so much debt on your credit cards, even if you pay it all off each month, or increase your total available credit. Because we've already established that if you're doing this, you're debt-free, all that remains for you to do is to increase your available credit. Here's how. Call up your credit card company and ask for a credit increase. You can say something like this. Hi, I'd like to request a credit increase. I currently have $5,000 available and I'd like $10,000. The credit card rep. Why are you requesting a credit increase? You can say, I've been paying my bill in full for the last 18 months and I have some upcoming purchases. I'd like a credit limit of $10,000. Can you approve my request? And the rep will say, sure, I've put in a request for this increase. It should be activated in about 7 days. I request a credit limit increase every 6 to 12 months. Remember, 30% of your credit score is represented by your credit utilization rate. To improve it, the first thing you should do is pay off your debt. Only after you've paid off your debt should you try to increase your available credit. Sorry to repeat myself, but this is really important. Michelle Miller, who's 38, wrote, when my husband and I were in college, we got a free t-shirt or something and got credit cards with reasonable limits, around $500. Sure, I had no income, but that didn't seem important to me at the time. Wouldn't you know it, I was responsible enough to have my limit raised to $2,000 after a very short period of time. Except that I wasn't actually responsible, and I paid thousands of dollars in interest and late fees and wrecked my credit rating for several years. It took many years for us to clear up this debt. I can't name one purchase that was truly necessary. Number 6, use your credit card's secret perks. Before I get into rewards programs, let me say this. Just like with car insurance, you can get great deals on your credit when you're a responsible customer. In fact, there are lots of tips for people who have very good credit. If you fall into this category, you should call your credit cards and lenders once a year to ask them what advantages you're eligible for. Often, they can waive fees, extend credit, and give you private promotions that others don't have access to. Call them up and use this line. Hi there. I checked my credit and noticed that I have a 750 credit score, which is pretty good. I've been a customer of yours for the last 4 years, so I'm wondering what special promotions and offers you have for me. I'm thinking of fee waivers and special offers that you use for customer retention. As discussed, credit cards also offer rewards programs that give you cash back, airline tickets, and other benefits, but most people don't take advantage of all the free stuff they can get. For example, when I had to fly to a wedding in some obscure town in Wisconsin, I redeemed my credit card's travel rewards to save more than $600 on the flight. Now that's an easy example, but there are even more rewards. Did you know that credit cards automatically give you amazing consumer protection? Well, here are a few examples you might not know about. Automatic warranty doubling. Most cards extend the warranty on your purchases. So if you purchase an iPhone and it breaks after Apple's warranty expires, your credit card will still cover it up to an additional year. This is true for nearly every credit card for nearly every purchase, automatically. car rental insurance. If you rent a car, don't let them sell you on getting the extra collision insurance. It's worthless. You already have coverage through your existing car insurance, plus your credit card will usually back you up to $50,000. Trip cancellation insurance. If you book tickets for a vacation and then get sick and can't travel, your airline will charge you hefty fees to rebook your ticket. Just call your credit card and ask for the trip cancellation insurance to kick in, and they'll cover those change fees, usually between $3,000 to $10,000 per trip. Concierge services. When I couldn't find tickets to the LA Philharmonic, I called my credit card and asked the concierge to try to find some. He called me back in 2 days with tickets. Now, they charged me a lot, actually, but he was able to get them when nobody else could. Most important, your credit card automatically tracks your spending, making it easy for software to download and categorize your expenses. For these reasons, I put almost all my purchases on a credit card, especially the large ones. Your key takeaway? Call your credit card company and ask them to send you a full list of all their rewards, and then use them. Tay Romeo, who's 34 years old, wrote, "We paid for our entire 3-week honeymoon using points, including first-class round-trip direct flights from New York to Vegas, luxury suite at the Venetian, luxury car rental, and all other accommodations, attractions, and food." Yeah, even food. "We literally didn't spend a penny and came home with $200 more. Thanks, Blackjack." Robin Ginny, who's 45 years old, wrote, "My honey and I go to Hawaii and Italy/Europe every year, almost entirely on points. It looks like we're living large and lavish, but our last 9-day trip to Italy cost us $350. And that was only because our favorite hotel in Siena doesn't take any points." What to do if you miss a payment? Nobody's perfect. Despite my warnings, I understand that accidents happen, and you might miss a payment at some point. When this happens, I use my Indian heritage to beat the companies by negotiating with them, and now you can too. Call them up and say, "Hi, I noticed I missed a payment, and I wanted to confirm that this won't affect my credit score." The credit card rep: "Let me check on that. No, the late fee will be applied, but it won't affect your credit score." Note, if you pay within a few days of your missed bill, it usually won't be reported to the credit agencies, but ask to be sure. You: "Thank you, I'm really happy to hear that. Now, about that fee, I understand I was late, but I'd like to have it waived." Credit card rep: "Why?" You: "It was a mistake. It won't happen again, so I'd like to have the fee removed." Note, always end your sentences with strength. Don't say, "Can you remove this?" Say, "I'd like to have this removed." At this point, you have a better than 50% chance of getting the fee credited to your account. But just in case you get an especially tough rep, try this. Credit card rep: "I'm very sorry, but we can't refund that fee. I can try to get you our latest blah, blah, blah marketing pitch, blah, blah, blah." You: "I'm sorry, but I've been a customer for 4 years, and I'd hate to have this one fee drive me away from your service. What can you do to remove the late fee?" Credit card rep: "Let me check on that. Oh, yes, I was able to remove the fee this time. It's been credited to your account." You don't believe me that it can be this simple? It is. Anyone can do it. Mistakes to avoid. Think ahead before closing accounts. If you're applying for a major loan, for a car, home, or education, don't close any accounts within 6 months of filing the loan application. You want as much credit as possible when you apply. However, if you know that an open account will entice you to spend and you want to close your credit card to prevent that, you should do it. You may take a slight hit on your credit score, but over time, it'll recover. And that's better than overspending. Always track your calls to financial companies. Unfortunately for you, credit card companies are very good at using BS late fees to increase their revenues. Unfortunately for them, I'm giving you a script to get these fees reversed. One of the best ways to improve your chances of having fees waived is by keeping track of every call to your financial institutions, including credit card companies, banks, and investment companies. When I call to dispute anything, I open a spreadsheet that details the last time I called them, who I spoke with, and what was resolved. If only criminals were as diligent as I am. You can create a simple spreadsheet that has the following columns. I call it the pocket tracker for tracking credit card calls. You can have call date, time, the name of the rep, the rep's ID, and any comments from that conversation. Whenever you make a call regarding a dispute on your bill, you would not believe how powerful it is to refer back to the last time you called and cite the rep's name, the date of the conversation, and your call notes. Most credit card reps you talk to will simply give in because they know you came to play in the big leagues. When you use this to confront a credit card company or bank with the data from your last calls, you'll be more prepared than 99% of other people, and chances are you'll get what you want. Disputing a charge, how to mobilize your credit card's army for you. Once, when I canceled my cell phone service, they told me my account had a $160 charge. For what? I asked. Wait for it. An early cancellation fee. Yeah, right. I knew I didn't have a contract, and I had negotiated out of an early cancellation fee a long time before that. Cell phone companies make a lot of money from trying these shady moves, hoping customers will just get frustrated, give up, and pay. But I'm not the one to try this on. Ever since the company had started trying to rip me off 3 years prior, I'd kept records of every phone conversation I'd had with them. Their customer service rep was very polite, but insisted she couldn't do anything to erase the charge. Really? I'd heard this tune before, so I pulled out the notes I'd taken the previous year and politely read them aloud to her. As soon as I read them, I experienced a miraculous change in her ability to waive the fee. Within 2 minutes, my account was cleared and I was off the phone. Amazing! Thank you, madam. Wouldn't it be great if that were the end of the story? I wish. They told me they wouldn't charge me, and then they did it anyway. By this point, I was so fed up that I called in the big guns. Many people don't know that credit cards offer excellent consumer protection. This is one reason I encourage everyone to make major purchases on their credit card and not to use cash or a debit card. I called my credit card company and told them I wanted to dispute a charge. They said, sure, what's your address and what's the amount? When I told them about my experience with the cell phone company, they instantly gave me a temporary credit for the amount and told me to mail in a form with my complaint, which I did. 2 weeks later, the complaint was resolved in my favor. What happens in disputes like this is the credit card company fights the merchant for you. This works with all credit cards, so keep this in mind for future purchases that go wrong. Manage debt to avoid damaging your credit score. If you close an account but pay off enough debt to keep your credit utilization score the same, says Craig Watts of FICO, your score won't be affected. Let me give you an example to show you what he means. If you carry $1,000 debt on two credit cards with a credit limit of $2,500 each, your credit utilization rate is 20%. That's $1,000 debt over $5,000 in total credit available. If you close one of the cards, suddenly your credit utilization jumps to 40%. That's $1,000 over $2,500. But if you pay off $500 in debt, your utilization rate would be 20%, or $500 over $2,500, and your score would not change. Don't play the 0% transfer game. Some people have started playing the 0% transfer game to profit off credit cards by making balance transfers or taking cash advances. They take the introductory 0% APR that you get when you open up many credit cards, which really only lasts about 6 months or so. Then they borrow money from the card at this low rate and stick it in a high interest savings account, which technically allows them to profit off the interest. Some people actually invest the money in short-term CDs or even stocks. By the way, these people are delusional. At the end, they plan to return the money and keep the interest. I find these 0% credit card games to be a huge waste of time. Sure, you can make a few bucks a year, or maybe even a few hundred, but the time, the risk of mismanaging the process, and the possibility of screwing up your credit score just aren't worth it. Most important, this is a distraction that gets you only short-term results. you're much better off building a personal finance infrastructure that focuses on long-term growth, not on getting a few bucks here or there. Dave Ramsey, a popular personal finance author and radio host, specializes in helping people get out of debt. He says, "I have met with thousands of millionaires in my years as a financial counselor, and I have never met one who said he made it all with Discover Card bonus points." Oh no, my credit score dropped. Some of my type A readers worry too much about their credit scores. If your credit score suddenly drops, first you should figure out why by getting a copy of your credit report and credit score. Then what's important is how you deal with it going forward. Your credit score can start recovering immediately as more positive information is reported. For example, that you've been paying your bills on time. So work to manage your credit wisely and consistently. As FICO's Craig Watts notes, the natural movement of these scores is to slowly grow. How do you think people end up with scores in the mid-800s? It's through years and years of consistently boring credit management. Rate chasers, wasting time earning $25 a month. One of my blog readers, a guy named Mike, wrote in to tell me about his rate chasing. In this case, it was savings accounts, not credit cards, but they're very similar. It's just moving money around from one account to another to eke out a few additional percentage points. Mike admitted, "I'm one of those rate chasers. So with $40,000 in emergency savings, I've consistently been earning anywhere between 0.65 and 0.85% higher than my operating money market account. That's an extra $300 a year in interest, which is definitely worth changing banks every 4 to 6 months for me." My response, "Mike, if you were smart enough to sock away $40,000 in an emergency fund, which is really impressive, by the way, I bet you're smart enough to spend your time doing something better than earning $300 a year, something that will let you earn much more sustainably. You're only earning 82 cents a day doing that. How about spending the same time optimizing your asset allocation? That step is probably worth thousands per year. Or starting a side business. Or even spending those few hours with your family. I don't know what you value, but in my eyes, any of those things would produce more value than $300 per year, especially for someone who's so far ahead of everyone else, like you are. This is just my 2 cents, which, by the way, is about 1/40th of what you earn today." Sorry, I couldn't resist. Focus on the big wins to get the big results. They may not be as obvious or sexy as jumping from account to account and getting a few extra bucks, but the big wins will make you rich over the long term. Debt, debt, debt. Statistically speaking, being in debt is normal. And yet, think about it. Is it really normal to owe more than you have? Maybe for certain things like a house or an education, but what about for random purchases on a credit card? Some people differentiate debts by calling them good debt and bad debt, depending on if the debt appreciates, like education, or depreciates, like a car, over time. Others despise debt altogether. Whatever the case, most of us have a lot of it, and it doesn't feel good. I want to talk about student loans and credit card debt, the two largest types of debt facing most people. To do that, let's start by tackling the obvious. We already know debt's bad. In fact, we already know what to do about it. So what's stopping us? The answer isn't just money. It's actually psychology. We know what to do. So why don't we do it? I can give you all the information on earth about credit, but until you master your money psychology, none of it makes a difference. That's why so many people know all this information, but they're still drowning in debt. Or they're sticking with poor credit cards that cost them thousands and thousands of dollars in fees and lost rewards. What's stopping them? It's not knowledge. It's something else. Dr. Brad Klontz from YourMentalWealth.com is a professor in financial psychology, and he coined the term invisible money scripts to describe, as he puts it, typically unconscious transgenerational beliefs about money. These are developed in childhood and they drive your behavior today. These beliefs are incredibly powerful. And once you recognize them in yourselves, you might understand your own behavior better. Here are some of the most common invisible money scripts around debt. Invisible script. It's not so bad. Everyone has credit card debt. At least I don't have as much debt as Michelle. What it means. Humans are wired to compare themselves to others. Interestingly, the worse situation we're in, the more we look for others to reassure us that we're not really that bad. It doesn't change our situation, but it sure makes us feel better about ourselves. Invisible script. I probably shouldn't buy this, but $100 is just a drop in the bucket compared to how much I owe. Oh, well. What it means. Once the problem is sufficiently large, we rationalize any single change as not enough, when in reality, real change happens through small, consistent steps. There are lots of similarities here between the decision-making of those in serious debt and those who are overweight. Invisible script. Paying interest is just like paying any other fee. What it means. This is normalization, or the idea that paying interest on your debt is actually not that bad. I've never met one person on this planet who says this phrase and actually understands the math of 14% interest rates. Invisible script. These credit card companies just try to trap you. What it means. This is the surrendering of responsibility for personal decisions. It's very common among people who are surrounded by friends and family who are also in debt. Look, yes, the credit card companies do want you to pay lots of fees, but it's also your responsibility for making the decisions that got you into debt in the first place. Until you take responsibility, the credit card companies will be a convenient enemy. Invisible script. I don't even know how much I owe. What it means. Notice the transition to a more hopeless script. In my estimation, over 75% of people in debt do not know how much they actually owe. The truth would be too painful, so they ignore it. But there is power in acknowledging the problem and making a plan. Invisible script. I'm just trying to do my best. What it means. This is the most hopeless of all. This person is effectively saying, I have no control over my finances and life happens to me, rather than acknowledging their own agency. Once someone says this, it's very difficult for them to ever change. Damn, that got really depressing. But I included these examples to show you how insidious and powerful these invisible money scripts are. These invisible money scripts turn into very peculiar behaviors. People know that they're not handling money the right way, but they continue doing what they've done for years on end. To the outside observer, this can seem puzzling. Man, you're in debt. Why are you spending $800 on that weekend trip? But people are not purely rational. In fact, these invisible money scripts explain why so many people in debt avoid opening their mail. You might say, just open your bills, figure it out, pay it off. It's not that hard. But if your invisible money scripts have been honed and sharpened by the stories you tell yourself over more than 20 years, like bills equal bad, it can be really hard to change. My goal with this book is to show you that you can change your money stories. So here's a question for you. What are the stories you've told yourself about debt? People don't know how much debt they're in. It would appear that Americans don't even know how much they owe, Binyamin Applebaum of the New York Times wrote. Only 50% of households reported any credit card debt, while credit card companies reported that 76% of households owed them money. It seems hard to believe, but in my experience, most people have no idea how much they actually owe. I get dozens of emails every single day from people in debt. When I ask them how much they owe, fewer than 25% know. When I ask them what their debt payoff date is, 95% of people don't know. Now, I have a lot of compassion for people in debt. Some are in tough life situations. Some don't understand how credit cards work. Some people have debt spread out over multiple credit cards and student loan accounts. Almost everyone is trying to do their best. But I have no sympathy for people who complain without a plan. And a plan means that if you're in debt, you should know how much you owe and the exact day that your debt will be paid off.
Almost nobody knows this.
A plan turns debt from a hot emotional topic to a cool math problem. As I say in a business class that I teach, it's not magic, it's math. Same for building a business, same for paying off debt. Most of all, a plan gives you control. It might take you 3 months to pay off your debt. It might take 10 years. But once you have a plan, and once you use the rest of this book to automate your plan, you'll know you're on track to live a rich life. I'll show you how. The burden of student loans. I'm not going to lie to you. Getting rid of student loan debt is hard. The average student graduates with about $30,000 of debt, but lots of my friends graduated with more than $100,000 in loans. Unfortunately, it's not like you can just wave a magic wand and make it disappear. In fact, even if you declare bankruptcy, you'll still have to pay your student loans. However, even if you have huge student debt, I want you to pay attention to how much money you're putting towards the monthly payments. Because the loan amounts are typically so large, even an extra $100 a month can save you years of payments. Let's look at an example. My friend Tony has $30,000 in student loan debt. If he pays off the loan over 10 years, his monthly payment will be about $345 a month, meaning he'll pay just over $11,428 in interest. But if he pays just $100 more every month, he'll have to pay only $7,897 in interest, and he'll pay his loan off in 7.2 years. Most of us accept our student debt as is. We get a bill each month, we pay it, and we shrug, frustrated about the burden of our loans, but not really sure if we can do anything. Guess what? You can change your student loan payments. First, to inspire you to take action on paying off your student debt, play with the financial calculators at bankrate.com. You'll be able to see how paying different amounts changes the total amount you'll owe. Second, I want to encourage you to put at least $50 more each month towards any debt you have. Not only is it a psychological victory to know that you're consciously working to pay off your debt, but you'll also be able to focus on investing sooner. Make sure this is automatic, drawing right out of your checking account so you don't even see the money. I'll describe automatic payments later in this book. Finally, if you find that no matter how you run the numbers, you're not going to be able to pay off your loan in any reasonable amount of time, it's time to call your lender. Look at the phone number on that monthly bill you keep ignoring. Call them up and ask for their advice. I can't emphasize this enough. Call them. Your lenders have heard it all. From I can't pay this month to I have 5 different loans and I want to consolidate them. You'll want to ask them the following. What would happen if I paid $100 more per month? You can substitute in the right amount for you. What would happen if I changed the timeline of the loan from 5 years to 15 years? If you're looking for a job, you might ask, what if I'm looking for a job and can't afford to pay for the next 3 months? Your lender has answers to all these questions, and chances are they can help you find a better way to structure your payments. Typically, they'll help you by changing the monthly payment or the timeline. Just think, with one phone call, you could save thousands of dollars. Dan Bullman, who's 28 years old, wrote, I refinanced $10,000 in private student loans, reducing the interest rates from 8% to 6%, which will save me about $2,000 over the life of the loan. Lila Nutt, who's 30, wrote, I called into Navient and changed my student loans from 20 years to 10-year loans. I had no idea the difference, and it ended up saving me over $10,000 just by paying an extra $50 a month. The most common internet comments about saving and debt. I have seen this conversation happen a million times on some random internet forum. Someone posts an article about how much money the average person should have saved at 35 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old. It gets 8,000 comments bemoaning capitalism, geopolitics, and baby boomers. Helpful commenter. Well, you can save 10% and start invest. 500 angry commenters. LOL. Save? I live in a cardboard box. There's no way any of us can save. 2 million likes on that comment. Helpful commenter. Well, you can start with even $20 a month. angry commenters. Maybe you can save $20 a month. I can't even spare 50 cents per year.
Helpful commenter. I'm sorry to hear that. Anyway, when I started saving a little bit, I took some of it and invested.
If you assume 8% returns, that means after a few years, angry commenters,